You're listening to the WP Tonic, WordPress and Tech, focused on building a successful business in WordPress aimed at the WordPress professional and power user. Join Jonathan Denwood and Kurt Von Annen as your host and co-host as we bring you great discussions from around the globe.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show. It's episode 983. In this show, we've got a great guest. We've got Imrid Sakid with us from the Web Squadron. He's a well-known influencer on YouTube and in the WordPress space. We're going to be discussing everything around how you can have or be a successful web designer and run your own agency in 2025 and at the beginning of 2026. What are the realities of building a successful business? Imran's been doing some fantastic videos recently, and I've been watching some of them, and I agree with almost everything he's been trying to say. And I think you've been doing an excellent job. So I thought we would have you on the show. Would you like to give a quick 15 to 20 second intro, and then when we go into the meat and potatoes of the show, you can give us a bigger outline of your background?
Yeah, so Imran Sadiq, Web Squadron. I went full-time with the web agency in 2022. I love to help businesses, clients out, get the most out of their websites, but also in terms of marketing, video marketing, which is why I do a lot of content creation on YouTube and creating tutorials.
That's fantastic. And I've got my ever helpful and patient co-host, Kurt. Would you like to introduce yourself to the new listeners and viewers?
Sure thing, Jonathan. My name is Kurt Von Annen. I own an agency called Manana Nomas, and we also work directly with the great folks and team over at WP Tonic.
Like I say, we could be going into the realities. I still think it's possible to have a really successful career, but I also think things are changing quite rapidly, and this change will accelerate in 2026. But I think if you follow somebody like Imran and listen to what he's got to say and other influencers that I agree with, I think you will be ahead of the pack. But before we go into the meat and potatoes, we've got a message from one of our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Hey, running a business is tough. You shouldn't have to worry about your website, too. With Kinsta's managed hosting for WordPress, you get lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7 expert support from real humans. Switch to Kinsta and see site speeds improve by up to 200% with effortless migrations and powerful, easy-to-use dashboard. Join over 120,000 other businesses who also trust Kinsta. Get your first month for free at Kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
We're coming back. We've also got a monthly sponsor, which is really appreciated. And I'm going to throw it over to Kirk for him to tell you about our monthly sponsor.
Well, thanks, Jonathan. Today's episode is sponsored by Mastirio LMS. And here's why we're excited about having them on the show. Their free version isn't a trial. It's not limited. And you get unlimited courses, lessons, students, and that's forever. And there's no credit card needed. So if you think about that, you can build your entire course business without paying a cent. The drag and drop builder is there. The quiz creation is there. Student tracking. There's a built-in payment processing, PayPal or Stripe. And you get all that in the free version. When you're ready for a certificate or content drip or advanced features, you can always upgrade to Pro. But honestly, most course creators will be able to launch for free. So if you'd like, check out Mastirio LMS. That's MASTERIYO.com. Mastirio.
And we really appreciate their monthly this month. And we're going to be doing the advert for the first couple of weeks of November. And we really appreciate their support. So let's go straight into it, Imran. I know that by watching a lot of your videos that you were working for a number of years with the UK National Health Service in project management IT support area. I think I'm right about that, but you'll correct me. It must have been quite a big jump. So how did you get into the web design development area initially, and what led you to make this decision to move away from the National Health Service? Because that is a big decision.
Yeah, so my journey actually goes all the way back to 1997 when I first went to university. And it was my first time I really experienced the internet with Netscape Navigator. And back in those days, whenever you visited any website, you know, you used to sit there downloading an image and it would take absolutely forever. I remember downloading an image from The Phantom Menace, which hadn't been released yet, just to get a picture of what Jar Jar Binks looked like. And I just sat there for about an hour just watching it scan. But I was mesmerized by the power websites gave us. Fast forward to 2002 when I started in the NHS and I worked as an analyst and I eventually worked up to become head of department. But during 2002, I started to realize just how atrocious websites were that were being built. They were very noisy, very heavy, full of the Ally McBeal dancing baby and an animated GIF of a dinosaur running across. They were everywhere, weren't they? Just everywhere. And I started playing around with HTML and a bit of CSS here and there. But I struggled quite a bit because when I worked in the NHS, I was very much a SQL person, data mining, data warehousing and creating reports. So I was trying to manage my brain with SQL and then there was the whole website side of things. When WordPress came on the scene, I got into it in about 2003 and I loved it because it suddenly meant it was almost like you had like the foundation built for you and now you could just go and add to it what you wanted. It was very basic back then.
No, well, that is quite early, isn't it? I think I got involved with it around 2012. So you were quite early, weren't you?
Yeah, it was like a breath of fresh air. I mean, it was very, very early, but it just meant that you weren't building like from like, you know, without anything in place. You had a foundation, you could build onto it. And I played around with it and I spent a ridiculous amount of money using Theme Forest. Like every time I wanted like, I like the look of this, spend $30 or £30. 2 weeks later, I buy another one. And I must have spent a ridiculous amount of money in the first 2 years. And I played around with WordPress for a good 10 years. And I did work on building websites for friends and family.
Yeah.
And then a friend of a friend and whatever. So it was always a side hustle. It was always like a hobby. And I might have done a website one a year. And it wasn't until 2011, but I then took it a bit more seriously. And I started really thinking more about what do you need to build to make it work for whoever you're building for. Don't just load up a template and go, right, that's what you get. Let's just drop your logo. Don't do the GoDaddy approach. Logo, images, change the name and that's it. But again, it was still a side hustle. But it was during COVID 2020. I was now working from home a lot more, obvious reasons. And that's when I realized I actually prefer or I enjoy creating content. And that's when I went more neck deep into WordPress. I do use Elementor a lot. I played around with other page builders as well. But I really went deep into it.
What couple of years are we talking about?
So we're at 2020 now.
Right.
So 2020.
Right.
And it was during 2020, I basically accelerated.
Yeah.
How am I going to get clients and how am I going to build websites? And it was in 2021. And I do feel like this is the COVID phenomenon now. During COVID, I think a lot of people experienced an upsurge in how many people wanted websites because so many businesses realized we now need websites to get found and whatever. But during 2021, I built 83 clients in that 1 year. That's when I realized I think I can make this work. Now, I realized I was never going to get that many clients year on year. So I was just kind of like, if I only achieve 30% of what I did in 2021 and I increase my prices by certain amounts, could I make this work? And I made a decision in January 2022 to retire from the NHS. And I'm glad I did it. I don't regret making that decision. It took me another year and a bit to be earning back to what I was earning in the NHS. And now I'm earning more than I ever was, and I'm happier. I'm working from home. I'm doing what I want to do, when I want to do it, work with who I want to work with. And the freedom it's given me is huge. But I know going forwards, you know, we are going to go through uncertain times with AI, and a lot of people now are going to turn to AI DIY solutions. But I do still feel like you can carve an area for yourself. And the advice I would give to everyone is just live within your means. Anytime you do get work, don't just go and throw and burn the money and go, right, I'm going to go on holiday. Just be wise with your money and what you do with it. And if you're careful, even when you do maybe have a drop in clients or work, you will get by. And if you love what you're doing, you will get through the bad times, because we are going to have some uncertain times. But I always feel like, I'll end it here so that you can get back to talking. But what I will say is, in 2011, all of the publishers in the UK were saying that the paperback book is going to die. Ebooks are the big thing in 2011. No one's going to buy a hardback. No one's going to be able to buy a paperback. The industry is going to die. We now have more hardbacks and paperbacks being sold than ever before. Something new comes on the scene. People get excited. Everyone jumps in. And then they realize, actually, I want to go back to either having something I know or having someone who knows what they're doing and just letting AI build a website for me. And we'll get onto that probably more with the other questions.
Yeah. Thanks for that. Over to you, Kurt.
Well, I want to make sure this doesn't get lost in the show notes somewhere. Imran pulled amazing ability in that Ally McBeal dancing baby reference. That was awesome. I had a flashback to, I used to work with Flash, and I had an amazing Flash website that was amazing. But to your point, it was noisy. It was a mess. So I see exactly what you were talking about in your answer. But some of the stuff I think we do miss, the some of the fun and the craziness that we used to put in the sites that we don't do anymore. Let's jump over to, talking about your YouTube channel and some of the things you've been discussing and the realities of what it's like to actually run an agency. I've been similar content with the WP Minute on their show as well. So you and I could probably do this all day, but what do you think like are some of the key things that a founder of an agency needs to know besides living within their means, which is fabulous advice? But what do you think are a couple of things a founder of an agency really needs to know going forward this year?
So to survive in this industry, what you need is clarity. I think the thing that goes missing is there's too many people out there that will say, you can make it as a web designer. You just need to learn this, learn WordPress, learn Gutenberg, learn Brix, learn Elementor, and you can make it as an agency. What's missing is clarity over what can you do and what can you solve. Because there's a million people out there that can make a website. Why does anyone need to come to you to get their website built? Now we've got AI and all these solutions that you put in your prompt and it will generate your website for you. What can you do? And I think what people need to do is bring clarity. So when you're telling someone, I'm a web designer, what you really want to be saying is, I help local charities to build websites to raise awareness of whatever they're doing. Or maybe I build websites for coaches to help them generate leads and get more clients and bookings. And I feel like, I don't know if I'm answering the question very well here, but I would say that if you're an agency, whether you're an existing one or you want to start one up, first take a moment to decide on what kind of clients do you want to work with. And I don't just mean landscapers and dentists. What I really mean is what kind of people do you get? So don't just make out you can build an amazing website if you're actually kidding yourself. Yeah. If you know you can build a good booking website for someone, that's going to actually help them, so you understand them and what they need, then say it and do it. Because when we say booking websites, a hairdresser will want a certain type of booking facility compared to a dentist. So there's going to be different needs, you know, deposits, calendars. Who needs to know about when the booking goes through? How does email communication work? And I think if people just take a moment to work out, how can I help you? They will get further. It's a bit like if you have a problem with your car and you're going to have loads of people that go, yeah, yeah, I can look at cars. I can do your servicing and your MOT and whatever. But if you know there is someone who works on your brand or make of car and they know what to do with certain types of problems, are you just going to go to the generic garage, which is half the price, or will you be prepared to probably pay a bit more to go to someone who offers clarity because you feel more secure and you're going to trust them more? Did I answer, Kurt? Did I kind of go off on a tangent?
No, you're doing a great job, Imran. It's kind of like when I listen to Chris Badgett talk about having the right avatar and isolating pain points, and kind of like what we talk about on the Membership Machine show. It's having good clarity about not just the what, because I think that's where some folks get lost. Like, I talk to a lot of agencies and they'll say, well, I've been a WordPress agency for, or we use these tools. And I'm getting to the point where when I talk or I advise other agencies, I'm like, nobody cares about your tools. They just want to know that what's their problem and how are you going to solve it? And how much is it going to cost and when's it going to be done?
Yeah. Can I just say something?
Sure.
When I'm designing websites, in the old days, I would almost always start off with going, yeah, we will build you a website and we'll be using WordPress and Elementor and then da 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 da.
Yeah.
Now, the only time they will see the word Elementor mentioned or even WordPress is when I'm actually giving them the proposal and I've given them an itemized breakdown in case there's a license cost or they need to be aware. No one needs to know that. Like when you go to McDonald's and you get a double cheeseburger, you don't need to know what oil they use in the bag or what the temperature heating was. You just want a damn good cheeseburger that melts in your mouth, which they rarely do, but you want a damn good one. So the onus so many people put on trying to wow the client with, we're going to use this and, you know, and I could be controversial now and say, no one cares if it's Elemental, Bricks, Breakdowns, Etch, Gutenberg, Wix, Squarespace. The client does not care. All the client wants to know is this website going to help me to be found? Is it going to help or guide people to contact me, make a booking, make a sale? And if you get that in your mindset as to how you can help them, you will survive.
So I want to take this example that we're talking about, you and I, and just expand it slightly before we pass it back to Jonathan. As an agency, do you personally think you're selling the website and like you're doing the website and maybe you sell the hosting and the maintenance with the website and it ends? Or are you in favor of almost becoming a quasi-vendor partner of the client and being responsible for local SEO, SEO, conversion, stuff like that? Like at what point does an agency stretch themselves too thin in a knowledge base offering too many services?
So I prefer to say, I like to work in terms of being a partner, not just a web designer. So I want to hopefully be talking to the client in 20 years time. It's actually something I do say to clients. I want to be talking to you in 20 years time. I want your business to be successful. Whether you use me or not to build more pages, that's not what I'm after here. I just want to know that you did well and it was because of my support. Now, there are elements of stuff you mentioned there, like the hosting side, maintaining the email, all of that. I will offer that, but I don't push for that because I have to say that's probably the least enjoyable aspect of doing web design because technology changes all the time, PHPs, this and that, DNS, everything, you know. It gets messy and all of that. And I don't like to get massively involved. I will guide them as to what they should use and I'll help them and I'll set things up. But I don't want to be the point of failure all the time with sorting things out. When it comes to though the longevity of your partnership with SEO, and now we have AEO with, you know, boosting your AI visibility with LLMS and things like that, looking at their keywords and how are they comparing to their competition? That is important, and that is a great source of recurring income, but you have to be very realistic. I will never, ever tell a business that I will get you onto page one of Google, that I will triple your income. Now, people who've worked with me might say I did that for them, but that's the result of how I worked with them. That does not mean I'm promising that to you. And I feel like if you're realistic over what you can do, so if they want a website where they can rent apartments or get bookings or sell products, you have to deliver that. That's within your means. You can do that. But as far as the agency goes, offer the SEO, offer the performance reporting, offer the fact that you will do revisions for them, and as long as they pay for it, let them know that you'll be there to guide them. So when it comes to accessibility statements, making their website more accessible, maybe it's to do with their privacy policies, like Termageddon, for instance, I use with some websites. They've done an update. I'll let the client know. Be honest, but don't push it. So what I always say to my clients is, SEO has changed. You got to start thinking about AEO, or you got to start thinking about accessibility, or you got to start thinking about privacy policies, whatever. I'll let them know. I will never push it. So I will say, if you don't want to do this, that's fine. As long as you're aware of it, so you don't come back and have a go at me for saying, why did you not tell me about this?
Yeah.
So always be there to let them know, but don't be the person who don't be the one who uses fear to make them use you, because I always feel like that's not a good relationship. That's not a partnership now. That's just like, that's like being employed, isn't it? Where you have to please the boss because you fear that you're going to get sacked. You don't want to make your clients start to feel like that, where there's resentment at all.
Yeah, I hear you 100%. Jonathan, over to you.
Yeah. Where do you think WordPress is with its bedrock, or I think its bedrock is regional cities, regions, digital agencies, you know, the 5-person digital agency or larger regional digital agency that use WordPress for the bulk of their work, but they're not part, they don't watch YouTube channels or the great channel that you have, maybe, or they don't go to WordCamps, or they don't download any kind of podcasts, or maybe the WordPress developer in the agency does, but the owner, the principal of the agency. But I've been surprised in a way how resilient WordPress has stood up, really, in this reality of the digital marketing agency. What's your own thoughts around that? Would you agree what I've just outlined, or you've got a different view on it?
Yeah, so in a nutshell, WordPress isn't dying. I think it's always evolving, sometimes at a slower rate than we would like to see, with things like Gutenberg and whatnot. I mean, I'll be controversial and say I was astounded how a couple of weeks ago everyone got excited because the block editor, you can now do border radiuses. And I thought, big deal. Like, you know, the amount of people that were jumping up and down about that. But I think that, like, with regards to WordPress, I don't think it matters if the agency boss or whoever doesn't watch YouTube videos, doesn't know me, doesn't know you, doesn't know anyone. Because I feel like in the UK, there's loads of writing festivals, but you can have an amazing fictional writer who's never been on a creative writing course, never been to any festivals, never watched any guidance or anything like that. When you know what to do and how to do it, you just do it. Because one of the great things I think about web designing and anything, you don't need a qualification. About 3 years ago, there were some companies that popped up on some events saying they were going to start like a qualification. And I really was not impressed by that, because I felt like, why do we have to start now having certificates to say I'm a qualified WordPress designer? Because I feel like the creativity and the way you use WordPress or Bricks or Elementor, it's subjective to you and how far you want to go and what you want to do with it and how much you need to learn. Because I feel like you could have an amazing WordPress website that's just absolutely basic, or you could do something that's groundbreaking, but the one that's basic might do better. It's all down to your audience. Yeah. So if you're an agency and you are working regions or wherever, I don't think it matters, because again, I feel like the use of WordPress, that's your tool. Mm. You could use Canva to do logo and graphic design. You could use Photoshop. You could use Adobe. You could use what you want, as long as you deliver on what the client was expecting or what kind of agreement you have. How you do it, it's one of those things where I just feel like, you know, I mean, if I don't hire chefs, but let's say I hired a chef and says, right, I want you to cook a meal. And all he did was actually go and get some stuff from Tesco and he bunged it together. So half of it was already pre-packaged. If he's done it in such a great way and I'm satisfied, who cares what they used for it? So I think with WordPress, as long as it's usable, and that's probably the crux of this, as long as we never get to a point where we go, I'm really struggling now. And I think that's the great thing, in that even though Elementor is so old, even though WordPress is so old, even though loads of tools out there, some of them haven't really evolved much, can you hand on heart still use it to get done what you want to get done? And if you can, then I would say just go with it. It's a bit like you're going to have a friend who drives a really, really, really old car. And there'll be times you'll say to them, why are you still driving that banger? And they will always say, because I can still get from A to B. So who cares how old it is? And I feel like that's probably the same thing with WordPress. Until we get to a stage where AI completely removes the need for WordPress, that's a different conversation. But I don't think I'm there yet.
I'm talking about the freelance or the small agency in any kind of... I've moved to Kansas recently, and I'm in driving distance of a reasonably large regional city called Wichita, and there must be, you know, like any city that's got over 500,000 people, it's got a load of one-off freelancers that are doing websites, let's say, between $7,000 and $10,000. And then you got the five-person agency that are probably doing a load of jobs. They probably wouldn't take a job if it isn't between 10,000 and 15,000. That any business that approached them based in the region of Kansas or in the west, central western region, they're probably going to be quoted minimum 10,000 to 15 and plus. What have you been surprised? And I don't know if that's the same situation. I think it's probably the same situation in the UK. Have you been surprised? I'm still surprised how WordPress is still seen as the main tool. What would you say about that?
Again, I think it matters less on what tool they use. I think it just comes down to who they're working with, because if they're able to command $10,000-$20,000, they're probably going after a certain type of client. And we know that if you're able to get your foot in the door with like big businesses will not want to work
well,
with
well, they're
you
kind of medium, to. They're kind of small, but they're between 20 and 100 people businesses, between 1 million and 10 million turnover in Kansas, aren't they?
Yeah. And they will usually have budgets set aside. So if someone says, I can build exactly the same website for $1,000, they don't want to know you because they don't believe it. If someone says, I'll do the same thing for $10,000, even though they're both using the exact same page builder, the exact same website, they'll go usually with the $10,000. So I think if you're able to get it, you're able to get it. You know, and if you're a freelancer and you're not able to command those fees and you can only get smaller websites, then go for it. Don't be afraid of increasing your prices, because I think you have to experiment. All of us have gone through this stage where we kind of doubled our prices at some point And if you win business, you stay there. And if you don't win business, you tweak it a little bit. So a lot of it just comes out to testing the market. But I know some people that are able to, you know, they get paid ridiculous amounts of money for building very basic websites, but that's just because they've managed to get their foot in the door with some big industries. I mean, their websites are tragic. I look at them and I kind of go, this is atrocious. I've seen websites built by companies for the NHS and for the councils. And they are tragic, but they, I don't know, they're friends with someone who works in that department or building, and they're able to get continual work. And if it works,
it's normally integrated with the back end systems. It's normally integrated in my experience, but I know totally what you're saying. I think it's a good time for us to have our middle break. We've had a great discussion with Imran, where we will be back in a few moments.
Updating plugins and themes shouldn't feel risky. That's why over 300,000 WordPress users trust WP Rollback. With just a click, you can safely roll back any plugin or theme. No manual file uploads and no downtime. And with WP Rollback Pro, you can download premium plugins and themes. Tools like Elementor, Gravity Forms, more. Track every rollback you do with detailed activity logs. Protect your workflow and take the stress out of updates. Learn more at WPRollback.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
I want to take the opportunity to point out we've got some great special offers from the sponsors that are much appreciated of the show, plus a curated list of the best WordPress plugins and services and technology aimed at the power user, the freelancer, or the small agency owner. You can get all these goodies, and it also saves you a load of time by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals. wp-tonic.com/deals. And you find all the goodies there, my beloved tribe. What more could you ask for? I say probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get on that page. Over to you, Kurt. Are you with us, Kurt?
I was muted. I was listening to the very beginning of the answer from Imran, and what I caught was kind of the same thing I had gone through, and I want to touch on this a bit. It came up in another discussion I was having with Toby Crines. And that's, I started my agency in 2007, and I didn't even know there was a community. I was just, to your point, Imran, was like, I was seeing needs, I was filling needs. I was getting referrals, I was growing my business. And before I knew it, and this was the height of the economic turndown in America, 2008, 2009. And I got 80 clients, and I'm running their Facebook and their Twitter and building their startup websites. And then came the community, and then came the podcasts, and then came the content, and then came all the stuff that we do. And I had an interesting conversation with a couple of different people regarding this. And it was like, well, wait a minute. Is all of that really helping, or is it actually hurting my agency? Because there's tons of people I know running agencies that aren't making any content that aren't on any podcasts, and they're thriving. They're doing just fine. So when we think of how people get to developing that success, how much of it do you think is from an agency perspective? How much of it is dependent upon like boots on the ground, networking, shaking hands, and just growing the business brass tacks versus going the content route? Like, we've all seen Mark Zemanski publicly say, I might focus more on content and less on agency work and see how that goes. But that's kind of a big question mark.
So I think it all depends on what opportunities and how comfortable you are. So because I worked in the NHS, it was difficult for me to manage my work life and then the side hustle of doing the web design. And how much was I going to let people know that I've also got this side hustle on? Because I hate to admit it, but even to this day, to an extent, if you tell anyone you're a web designer, they kind of go, oh, that's dead easy. Oh, that's, you know, simple. That's not a really difficult job, is it? They almost look down on you a little bit, which I hate. But I find it's down to opportunity. So if you are someone where you're, you know, a chamber of commerce, or you're always meeting business people or meetings, or you're always networking, or you're working in an area that's loaded with people that you know might want a website or not, then I think boots on the ground is a great way. People will come to meet, know you, and you know you'll get word of mouth from referrals. You don't need to worry about building a brand identity. I, however, found that because I was, people knew me as the NHS person, I had to build up my brand, and it almost happened accidentally. So I would say that, and I'll tell you about that in a moment, but I would say that if you are someone who's not visibly exposed to lots of people, then I would say it's good to build your brand virtually. And what worked for me was, and this was all accidental, in that I didn't officially start the Web Squadron YouTube channel until June 2021. But 1 year prior to that, I was on the Elemental Facebook group like every day, helping people out, answering questions. I never asked them to hire me, but I was always there. I'd become quite well known. And the only reason I started the YouTube channel was because I got sick of answering the same question the same time. You get fed up of writing things out. So I started the channel and I started doing videos, and it grew and grew and grew. And then over time, that built my brand up, and people started coming, wanting to work with me on the back of that. So I was able to start getting clients and word of mouth, whatnot, without me having to go out and cold call or contact businesses and stuff like that, because I never really ever enjoyed that side of things anyway. But if you're boots on the ground, and or you haven't got time to create content, you don't have to create content. If you are visibly exposed, then I feel like if you can get your foot in the door and get out there and meet people, then go and do it. But the advice I would give to anyone now, even if you are visibly exposed, and I actually say this to businesses as well. So if I'm working for a client and they want a website, and I go, right, your website, we can't do it for another 2 months or a month or whatever, I want you right now, start posting on Twitter, LinkedIn. If you can start to do videos on TikTok, maybe you're a gardener who mows the lawn. Just do a video showing how you mow. What settings do you use? What equipment do you use? Don't talk about what you charge. Don't talk about your prices. Show off what you do and how you do things. Start building the hype now, so that when you do go live with your website, whether you're a business or a web designer, when you do now start advertising your services or telling people about who you are, people are already going to know you. So I would say that if you're in an area where you're surrounded by businesses, just get out there, meet and greet, and you'll get business. If you don't have that pleasure, then I would say start building up your brand now. Start getting out there, start engaging, start conversing. You know, even if you're just watching YouTube videos like you're watching this right now, just put a comment in. Do you like what we're saying? Do you not like what we're saying? You might spark a conversation with someone else, but the more you do that, the higher, well, you're going to increase your chances that someone might recognize you and might want to work with you.
Yeah, that's really insightful. It made me flash back to, you know, I worked directly with the folks at Lifter LMS, but I was the guy that was answering the Facebook questions or helping someone out or doing a messenger thing. And then eventually Chris just said, dude, you just want to come work for us and help people, you know, and it's been fun. Right. So I kind of went a different path than you were there, but yeah, get involved, get in the groups, find out where the people are and just add value. Jonathan, over to you.
Yeah. Can I ask you a quick question that's not on the list about your YouTube channel? because it's a great achievement that I think you've got over 100,000 subscribers. And I know how much work that entails. Because I've been publishing to YouTube for quite a while, but it was only last year that I really started to get serious. And I need to do more work, but I've got now about 12,000 subscribers. But they're very niche. They're about membership, or they're mostly about membership and technology around membership. But I know to get, am I correct that only about 3 or 6% get over 10,000? I think it's some low figure, isn't it?
Very low. Yeah.
Very low, isn't it? But what are some of the lessons that you feel happy to share with us about your journey with YouTube? Because it's an amazing achievement that you've done. I know there's other channels that have 50, you know, half a million, a million and that. But in the area of WordPress or web design, to get 100,000 is a great achievement. And I give you full marks to doing it.
So I speak a lot behind the scenes to some of my subscribers or people that follow me or part of the forum. And a lot of them do say to me that the reason they're attracted to me and the channel is that I don't do a lot of sponsorship videos. And they say that I'm very consistent with what I use. So I won't suddenly jump between different like add-ons or different stuff to use for SEO or performance. They say you're very consistent for the last 4 years. So I don't, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but I don't sell out. So I get hounded every day by some hosting companies or some people, and they.
Well, I'd imagine with 100,000 subscribers, you'll hit almost every day.
Yeah. And there are some that are continuously upping their offer. And I go, look, I'm not interested. I don't want affiliate commissions. I'm not going to sell a product that I'm not even using myself on an everyday basis. But what I would say is that, in terms of the channel, sorry, what was the question again? You're going to have to remind me, John. I've started talking.
No, because, you know, it wasn't on the list. So, you know, are there any lessons you've learned about building the YouTube channel that you could share with the audience?
Yeah. Okay. So what I would say is I've actually got videos. I've just checked. I've got videos already uploaded and scheduled into YouTube until February the 18th, 2026.
Wow.
And that's at the moment, that's actually 7 videos a week. I've upped how much I'm putting out a video a day. So I've just got stuff coming out. And what I've done is try to ensure that nearly everything I put out is what I call as evergreen as possible. So I have found that if you are going to create videos that solve a problem, there's a good chance that people might still be watching that video in a year or two. If you put out a video that says, and guess what? Gutenberg or whatever, they've now got border radiuses in version da 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 da. It's only relevant for that point in time, and it loses traction quite quickly. So whenever I've done a video, whenever Elementor have a new beta version, for the first 2 days, it will shoot up. And then after that, it just dies and dies and dies a death. So what I try to do is as much evergreen videos like how to do bento grids, how to handle clients like scope creep or boundaries or difficult clients, or you're not getting paid, or how to plan your time, or how to design XYZ. And I would say that if you can think in an evergreeny way, your videos will probably get, I mean, I've got video, some of my most best performing videos on a weekly basis, there's one video that's 4 years old and it still gets watched like nearly every day by someone. And I can't quite understand why, because it's quite a bad rubbish video. But people keep coming back to watch it. So as evergreen and possible. And what I would also say is, so you mentioned how there are other people out there that have got like 500,000 or way more subscribers.
Well, there's one, I'm not going to name him because I just don't. There's a couple, but there's one particular one. And I mentioned it, we interviewed Matt Medeiros last week, and I mentioned this particular video, and it was a new video, and the influencer, who's not, he's got a much bigger audience than you and me, and he was saying that he didn't feel any WordPress plugin should be more than $50. And if it was more than $50, basically he was saying that the plugin company were ripping people off. And I just found it horrendous. I just found it quite sickening that somebody would look in the camera and say that. But he was fine with it, and I don't know if he really believes that or not. I can't tell, but he's got over 500,000 subscribers. So it just kind of blows my mind away.
All I'm going to say is, and I'm not going to name names, that I used to be head of business intelligence. So I read between the lines and I can analyze data and discover things that people don't always want to admit to. And I would say that a lot of the people that have got, very, very big subscribers, it's very much like people who pay sponsored adverts to get onto page one of Google. And that's all I'm going to say, is that there's a difference between earning your subscribers and your following honestly and transparently.
I'll get the drift.
It via alternative, ulterior means. You can see the trends. You can look at the historical trends and you can kind of go, I'm not sure how you gained 200,000 subs in like one day. Well, it makes no sense.
It's all right. I got the picture. But
the beast doesn't get that much in a day. So,
yeah, but it's more the messaging, isn't it? What I was saying, there seems to be a group in the YouTube, WordPress, web design development that make outlandish statements, don't they? And one of the things I admire about you is you can be a bit edgy sometimes, but in general, they're not outlandish, are they?
No. I wear my heart on the sleeve. I know I started some noise and chaos in July when I spoke about WordPress cliques and WordCamps and how a lot of them are, you know, we're moving away
from. I thought you were right about that myself.
I know. And I have to say, though, that what I found, and this probably isn't the topic for this talk, but what I found quite funny is that I was very careful to not name anyone's podcast or anyone particular, but I found it amusing how so many podcasts started quoting me or discussing it openly because they were almost having to defend what I'd said. And I feel like that kind of confirms the point I'm making, in that if you're going to have a WordPress event, let's make it about WordPress. Let's not just make it an event where sponsors pay in and we talk about stuff that deep down the average freelancer or person does not care about. Let's get back to basics of designing and how you do XYZ and how you get clients and how you build up and scale up. Let's get back to that. And that's why I've actually started a local meetup in my town that I started on Saturday, and I'm going to do it monthly. And my aim is to make it so damn big that Matt Mullingberg and Automatic have to make WordCamp UK happen again, because it's for me an atrocity that we don't have a UK WordCamp proper event. I just feel like it's about damn time. So, and I'm going to make it about WordPress. That's my aim. It's all about WordPress and Elemental, but it's about WordPress.
Well, hopefully you invite me as a speaker. I'll come and I can see my family and put it as a business expense if I can afford it.
I just got to jump in. I'm loving this trend because Imran's doing the meetup in the UK. We just interviewed Devin, who's doing the meetup in San Diego. And Manana Nomas is hosting the meetup in Hutchinson, Kansas. So we've been on a streak lately with people that are super motivated at helping WordPress, but at the grassroots level, it's really cool to see.
Yeah. Over to you, Kurt, for the next question.
Oh, I got to get back on the rails. That's my job, huh? AI tools, Imran. just give up the ghost, man. What are the AI tools that you use that you could share with our viewers and listeners that you think kind of add to your efficiency or productivity?
There is just one. It's ChatGPT. I know, you know, some people like Perplexity, Claude, Grok. I dabble with them now and again, but I just feel like ChatGPT was the first one on the scene. And I just love using it to delve a bit deeper sometimes into certain questions I have about something I'm doing, or maybe I'm trying to write a bit of code, a code snippet, or I'm experimenting with a bit of HTML or CSS. But I use Notion for my planning, but I use that just for planning, not as AI. But ChatGPT is really, really helped me to, in the last 2 and a bit years, I've developed so many code snippets, especially this year, to really help people do stuff for their websites that I don't think they ever thought they could ever do. And I don't sell them. I create them, make sure they work, and I let people have them for free. And again, that's something that's helped my channel and me to grow. But ChatGPT, what about you? What about both of you? What do you use? Do you have a preference for anything?
I'm a sucker for a lot of things that are like lifetime deals. So I keep trying these new packages. But Imran, I've fallen in love with a subscription that is Magi, MAJAI.co, I think. And what it is, it's a collection of the tools. So for the one subscription, I get to use ChatGPT, Grok, Claude, and then it tracks all of those chats and those different channels in one dashboard. So I don't get lost on where I look something up, because I'll run into I'll look up at something in Grok while I'm on X. Well, then when I want to reference it later, I can't remember. Did I look it up in Magi? Did I look it up on ChatGPT?
Yeah.
So I like the thing where everything's together. And so Magi is affordable and it gives me access to all the main tools, not all the tools, but it gives me access to the main tools and tracks everything for me in one screen. So that's my spot.
Yeah, I use quite a lot, Imran. I use something called Word Hero for kind of quick and dirty meta descriptions or like one or two paragraphs. I use something called Koala as my AI writer. I do use AI writer. I got in a little bit of trouble with Google, but I use Claude with Koala. I use a very expensive humanizer because I edit all the content that I produce in AI, and I'm not producing hundreds of articles every week. I produce like from 3 to 5. Past couple of weeks, I've been slacking, but I've been dealing with a few issues. But I use a very expensive humanizer called Ryan. I use video on the articles, and I do edit them quite extensively because there are a lot of factual mistakes in the articles. They're quite well written. But they need fact checking. Every article needs fact checking, and I use Claude as well. But I've got about, and I use another tool called Neon Writer as my kind of SEO tool with Koala. So I've got a whole group of kind of writing SEO tools to help me, Imran, that I use. Are you okay to stay on for some bonus content, or do you have to leave us on the hour?
No. I'm fine.
Because we've got to wrap it up now, because Kurt's got a prior engagement he's got to go on. So we're going to wrap up the podcast, but we're going to continue talking. You'll be able to see the whole interview on the WP Tonic YouTube channel. I think it's been a great interview. So, Imran, what's the best way for people to find more about you and what you're up to?
Yeah, just do a search for Web Squadron on YouTube. You'll find the Web Squadron channel. Go and watch every single one of my videos from start to finish to ramp up my view rate. And that's all you need to do for the next 5 years of your life.
That's fine. And Kurt, what's the best way for people to find out more about what you're saying and your ideas?
Well, mananonomas.com is for business stuff, and we're Manana Nomas on all the social channels. But if you want to connect personally, I am the only Kurt Von Annen on LinkedIn. So hit the connection there and we'll talk.
And if you wanted to support the show, you really enjoyed this interview, and I thought it was a fantastic one. We've been on a roll lately with some great guests. If you want to support the show, me and Kurt would really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes or Spotify. If you're listening on your phone, they make it on the app of either of those platforms. They make it really easy to leave a review. And if you can, leave a review. And I see it, I'll read it out. So good, bad, or indifferent. We've been getting some great reviews lately. It's more to do with the guests than ourselves, or me. But we would really appreciate that. We will be back next week. We'll see you soon, folks. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also, to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.